Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it was really great to watch the inauguration today. I got to be honest, I would have loved to have been there. And watching the inauguration, you know, which just reminds me of the two that we went to during the Obama years when I took my oldest daughter. And there were so many people that, you know, that I'm a big guy. There were so many people. I had I had her on my shoulders as I was carrying her because I was afraid she'd get crushed. And it was like I was walking on air. There were so many people where I was just lifted up in this mass of humanity walking to see President Obama's first inauguration. And the second one, I was literally a paper airplane throw away from him, which was incredible. The last one I didn't make it, and this one I really wanted to go to. But there were plenty of flags. The one thing that would be true if Trump said it is, he actually did have more people at his inauguration than Biden did. But it took a global pandemic for that to not happen. So there is that. Anyway, we're going back talking to the people we spoke to 4 years ago on this day. And one of those folks, the first time I met our next guest, Propane Jane's been up back weekly, almost religiously every Monday night here to talk with us. That's why I've invited her back on Inauguration Day. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back. Happy 4th anniversary to me, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I went back and I'm going, you know, that was the first time we spoke, was 4 years ago on this day. And we talked about just how crazy it was going to be. We talked about, the fact that there was going to be chaos. You laid out the argument that, you know, white right-wing extremists were going to do all these things. I mean, it was eerie going back and listening to what you said because, again, like Sarah Kendzior earlier, you were spot on accurate.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, when I thought back to our first chat, I was just thinking about how controversial it was at that time to say that there wasn't something quite right with Trump's mental health. And just, you know, 4 years later to think that now, I mean, it's like kitchen table talk. Of how insane this man is. I hear so many lay people throwing around the terms narcissist and sociopath, and it just seems like everybody's kind of become an armchair psychiatrist over the course of the last 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost to the point where I was thinking about this, that there are so many psychiatrists and people in the mental health field who have come out. And you were one of the first, I mean, at least one of the first that I saw. And now they're like, you know, superstars are like this. I was actually thinking about doing like a trading card collection of them now.
Yeah. And it didn't take long for people to stop being afraid to say it. And again, I mean, I think that's what's so shocking to me about it is at the very beginning, it was something that people felt like was taboo and no, we shouldn't be talking about that. And people were certainly afraid for their careers and afraid to be sued. And, you know, I think over time, as unstable as he became, the more comfortable people became, you know, in terms of saying that what they were seeing was dangerous and an emergency. And obviously right up to the end there where everybody was calling for the 25th Amendment. And I think it's really ironic how things came full circle that way, considering that I wanted them to do the 25th, at high noon on January 20th, 2017.
I think a lot of us did. But, you know, the thing is I remember talking to you and I remember thinking that, you know, wow, this is, you know, I think she's right. But you were saying, you know, this is almost definitive. And over the years I've watched, you know, and again, you know, there are those people who were, they were spot on from the beginning. So, you know, you go back to those and you go, well, how did you know? Clearly you're training and you pay attention to this stuff, but how do you know this stuff?
Well, I mean, I think there was so much in his history and so much in his public persona that certainly gave an indication that he was somebody who didn't have much regard for rules and regulations and that would sue until he was blue in the face if he felt like somebody was slandering him or trying to hold him accountable for anything. that's how he operated in the business world. And I think on top of that, the way he campaigned in 2015, he was throwing insults left and right. Some of the first essays that I wrote about his mental status were in regards to the insults he was levying against Hillary Clinton and Alicia Mercado, Rosie O'Donnell, the, you know, disabled man. The list goes on and on, where that made it pretty evident that he lacked empathy and that he lacked decorum and just basic human decency. And so I think it was pretty apparent that he would be a bully in office. I think there were a lot of people that sort of felt like, oh, you know, there's no way he's going to continue to do that when he's president, as if somehow a personality can just change overnight, right, just because of the job that you're holding.
Right.
Now
the question I have then, because you were right, I mean, he's not going to change. And I don't think he's going to go away. I mean, what are you expecting in these days? You know, how does his ego, how does his narcissism, how does a sociopath deal with the kind of beating that he took? You know, 7 million more. Biden got 7 million more votes. He lost by the exact number that he beat Hillary Clinton by, that he said was a landslide. How does he deal with that, given the things that you know about him?
Well, I mean, I think what we've seen over the last couple of weeks is this narcissistic injury and narcissistic slump, where he's basically retreated. Now, certainly he's been deplatformed in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously he's not allowed to tweet, and he's been taken off of most of social media, which was basically, you know, his narcissistic supply. That was how he communicated with people. That was how he riled up his base. And so I think, you know, without that, in addition to the fact that he lost and there was nothing he could do about it, I mean, these last 2 months, he's just been consumed with trying to overturn the results of the election. And you know, whatever little hope he had of, you know, the lawsuits in court and getting his supporters to basically, you know, commit sedition and insurrection and treason, to delay, you know, him being kicked out of office, none of that was actually going to happen. But I think that he actually had this hope that it would, and that he would somehow be able to overcome it. And so that realization finally sinking in of, no, you're really gone. You really did leave the White House. I think it's a testament to how demoralized he feels that he didn't bother. I don't think that it was just a, you know, trying to be a slap in the face to Biden to not show up at the inauguration.
Right.
I think that's also a function of the shame and the inadequacy that he feels that he's no longer in that position, and he's unpopular.
Right. And
so he's not who everybody wanted.
Right. So the thought is, you know, because I have polar opposite views of what happens next. I think that there's one part that, you know, like a petulant child, he's going to go to his room and put the covers over his head, and we'll hopefully never see him again. Or there's he's going to be, start the, you know, the cable network, or start a new news channel, or end up, you know, going with that Joe Ricketts guy, who's going to start, you know, the Straight Arrow News that's supposed to be straight down the middle, even though he gave a ton of money to Trump. I see polar opposites. I don't see any happy medium there. I don't see any, he shows up for functions and is, you know, patted on the head and goes away. I see him either bailing completely or wanting to dominate again.
I agree. I think it's definitely going to be an all or nothing. And I think that, you know, he's got to, in many ways, time is of the essence. A lot of his most fervent supporters are starting to lose hope, right? I mean, these QAnon people are totally melting down all over the internet. The Proud Boys, I just read an article in the New York Times that the Proud Boys are turning on him, calling him weak, you know, because he set them up to be massively disappointed by making them feel like this isn't over. There's still something he can do to change the course of history. And so I think that because so many of them are demoralized and because he's been deplatformed, there's just this empty vacuum And I think that his ability to reach out to them and bring them back into the fold, in many ways is limited because of his inability to get on social media. And I think also because a lot of these networks are having time to think about, okay, where do we go in this new era? They want to focus on Biden. They want to focus on what the next step is, and to sort of do that backpedaling and give Trump more of a platform, I think is just useless and dangerous at this point. I think what really hurts him in that regard is the insurrection that happened on January 6th, because it makes it so dangerous to be associated with his rhetoric. And so I think so many institutions are backing away from that. And as far as the Republican Party goes, you know, they're losing donors. They're losing all of these people who don't want to be associated with that brand anymore. And so I hope that he goes to the fringe. And I hope that he, you know, doesn't have that opportunity to get back and run for office again.
Yeah. Just go golfing.
You know, I hope that they go. Exactly. I mean, I hope that they can shut down any inklings of an idea of running for office in the future in the Senate with this impeachment trial, so that he just has all of the air taken out of his balloon.
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm right, and I'm hoping we're never going to hear him again, and I don't have to say his name again. Because to be honest, we've already spent way too much time on him, because this is Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's day. I wanted to get your thoughts first on the fact that, you know, we have now the first African-American vice president woman in office. I wanted to get your thoughts on you know, what that was like for you today.
Oh, it was tremendous. I mean, I cried every time I saw her. Just the history that's being made, and the joy that so many people around me are feeling in feeling like, hey, not only did we get a woman, we got a Black woman. We got an Asian woman. We got so many things wrapped up into one. And to finally have a recognition that we can hold seats of power. We can be in the most powerful office in the country, in the world. And I think it's a victory, not just for women of color, but also just women in general. I think so many of us were so disappointed and still to this day feel robbed. That Hillary Clinton wasn't able to be the first woman president. And so I think it's really important to chip that piece of the glass ceiling away to get in as vice president. And I think that you know, the way that Joe Biden really seems to respect her and value her opinion and the way he's included her in everything, I think is really important too, because not only is she the vice president, I mean, you know, Biden's not a young man, right? I mean, I think that everyone, when they look at her, is also envisioning somebody who could step in and be president if need be. And so I think that, you know, it's such a contrast to thinking back to 2008 and that idea of people not wanting to vote for John McCain because they didn't want Sarah Palin to be a heartbeat away from the presidency. And to be in this moment where 81 million people wanted Kamala Harris to be a heartbeat away from the presidency, I just think it's indescribable.
I know it was a powerful moment, and especially having Sonia Sotomayor doing the oath, I thought was important as well. I wanted to get your thoughts on the speech.
Absolutely,
the speech you know, hit the tones that I think everybody was expecting. I'm critical of everything, so it didn't meet what I wanted to see. But I got to be honest, it's what I expected. He hit all the tones.
Yeah.
We've got to bring unity. He was a little forceful, and I thought that was good. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
You know, what I was really struck by was, and not just in Joe Biden's speech, but even in Amy Klobuchar's speech and also in the poem, I think that there was this sentiment that really made you feel like we were coming out of a war. So many references were made to Abraham Lincoln, the Capitol Dome, Civil War. And I think that the country in many ways feels battered. It feels like we've been through a war. And certainly those members of Congress that were there in the seat of our government, having just been attacked 2 weeks ago, I mean, certainly they feel like they were under a major attack. But it feels like we won the battle for the soul of our nation, as Joe Biden's campaign often said, that we are a nation that has been at war with itself. And as Joe Biden said, it's been an uncivil war. And so I think that it was important for them to speak to that, because that is how so many people feel, not just the battle between, you know, the right and the left, blue and red. We've been at war with this virus. But I think what was also really important was that he named white supremacy. He put an explicit name on what we've been facing. And that was his first campaign ad. You know, he really focused on the violence in Charlottesville and that element of white supremacy that Donald Trump stirred up. And again, you know, I think at that time, a lot of people felt like Joe Biden was overselling it and sort of making a bigger deal about it than it really was. And then you come full circle to us being attacked by these insurrectionists, somebody walking through the Capitol building, waving a Confederate flag. A Confederate flag didn't even make its way into the Capitol during the Civil War. And so to see those images over the last couple of weeks of those National Guard troops literally lying down, staked out inside of the Capitol building, it really does make you feel like our country has been at war. And So I think it was important that so many speakers spoke along those lines, because that is where we are as a nation, and we have to rebuild from that.
No, and we've got a lot of rebuilding to do. And I wanted to get your thoughts because, you know, obviously Biden's call for unity is something I think a lot of people want. I personally don't think we can get to that point until there's accountability and we find all the crimes of this past administration, the former administration, and I'm loving saying that. And we hold those people accountable. I don't know that we can begin to heal until you rip the Band-Aid off and clean out the infection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we also have to normalize normal.
Like today. Today, for instance, we had a press briefing. We had a press briefing.
Exactly.
And she didn't lie.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, just the little things, right? I mean, the little things of how our government is supposed to function, how our world is supposed to function. We have to be reintroduced to all of that again. Anytime you're in this traumatic situation, for as long as we've been in a traumatic situation, that level of trauma had become normalized.
Yeah.
And so it's like we have to relearn how our government is supposed to function, and we have to relearn how a president is supposed to function.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, do we now have to every time we see a boring bureaucrat, someone who works for like the Department of, you know, whatever, do we now have to thank them and hug them and tell them, you know, how much we appreciate them? Do we have to do that in public, or can we just be appreciative silently?
Hey, we can just be appreciative silently.
I mean,
we're still social distancing. that's why I thought it was so funny when Trump got kicked off of Twitter. You know, all these people on the right wing were saying, you know, he has no way to communicate with people. And it's like, Twitter wasn't the only way the president was supposed to be communicating with the world, right? But that's how normalized it became.
Yep.
And I don't think that, you know, that's something that Joe Biden is going to continue, you know, tweeting out his every move. I think that he's going to return to, his press releases, the pressers. And I think that is what is going to to help people to understand that, hey, we're in a different time. We're returning to where the way things used to be.
Yeah, some bit of normalcy. So what you're telling me then?
Important for healing.
So what you're telling me then is no rage tweeting at 3 a.m. from Joe Biden then?
Definitely not.
No ambient tweeting either.
He's not going to do that. He's not even going to want to do that.
And look, I think
Jill wouldn't even let him do it if he even wanted to.
There's an interesting point. So I guess the last line of questioning I've got for you, because again, there are a lot of voices saying that we need to heal, we need to unite.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that can't happen until we clear out the infection. I've been watching a lot of these Twitter and TikTok videos of these Q people and these MAGA folks who are, as you said, visually they're distraught. The 190 yeah. indictments that were supposed to come down today didn't happen. Joe Biden didn't get arrested today. Joe Biden was actually, sworn in. He gave an inauguration speech. He signed the paperwork. He actually went to the Oval Office and did some work. All of the things that they were telling themselves wasn't going to happen. And I've been saying, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to be dead wrong, but you got to admit it. You got to admit you were wrong and then try to make some atonement and try to do the right thing, come back to society. Is there a way, do you think, that we can embrace that crowd, or are they too far gone in your professional opinion?
Well, I mean, I don't think they want to be embraced, is the first piece of it. I mean, I think they want to remain angry. I think they want to continue to wallow in this feigned victimhood, because, that's their identity now. Their identity has become, I saw this, I don't know if you've seen the MAGA lady that's like, I'm having a panic attack.
Yeah, yeah.
God, please save
yeah.
us.
Love that one. One of my favorite, Satan. Everything's about Satan.
Exactly. But she kept saying over and over again, this is our country. This is our country. And I think that these are the people that firmly believe that this is a white man's country. And they wanted a white supremacist in charge. And so I think any day that their guy is not in the office is going to feel like a loss. It's going to feel like a tragedy for them. And so I don't think that they can be embraced, because being embraced means being a part of something that they don't associate themselves with.
Right.
They intentionally want to be a part, and they intentionally want to feel superior by being a part.
Yeah, I get that, but I don't want them to go through, and maybe it's just, the liberal side of me being soft and all of that. But I don't want them to go through what we went through the last 4 years. I want them to think that, hey, you know what? We can all move together, forward together. My hope for Joe Biden is that he restores what was the American dream, revives that, returns reward to work, and rebuilds our infrastructure and unites us not through words, but through actually getting things done and making people's lives better, even theirs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's what, Democratic presidents traditionally do. We don't necessarily say you have to, want to be helped by us in order to help you. And I think that, they will just benefit from the policies that are put in place, regardless of whether or not they want to benefit from them. I think the hope, more than anything, is that the temperature will be turned down, to the point where, they can just be mad, but not necessarily be on the brink of violence every day. And that may end up being the best that we can hope for.
That's a start.
From them.
Because there was a guy, I was driving home today and I saw a guy with a scraper in his driveway, scraping off a Trump sticker off his bumper. And I'm like, wow, this could be a monumental moment. This could be, oh my God, I woke up, I realized, we've got to move forward. I got to get this, off my car, and I'm gonna join society. Or, the other side, we're gonna go deeper underground into the bunker and plan the overthrow from there.
Well, I mean, maybe so, but again, I think that the dose of reality that they're going to be getting on a daily basis, that dose of normalcy that they're going to be getting, is going to help in ratcheting down their level of hysteria. You know, the thing about Trump being so dangerous was that he had that mouthpiece and that platform to continue to stir these people up every day. And so I think in the absence of that, they're not going to have many avenues to go down to continue to feed themselves that junk. And so, you know, the rest of us, I think, really just need to remain vigilant, obviously, and make sure that we're, like you said, holding people accountable so that this never happens again. You know, part of the healing also involves figuring out what the source of the sickness was. And so I think more than anything, you know, this is the time to look at our media, to look at our institutions, to look at the laws that we have in place and figure out how is it that we went so wrong? You know, what safeguards do we need to put in place so that this never happens again?
I'm right there with you. But I'm excited about the next, at least the next year into the two. I'm excited about the possibilities, and I hope you'll be back to share some thoughts as this continues. I always appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
I surely will. Thank you, and have a great week.
You as well. Our good friend Propane Jane, always great to talk to her. Look, gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.